Tonight on Dispatches, how British policy is influenced by supporters of a foreign power.
Something became skewed in British politics when an unelected friend of the Prime Minister had so much influence.
Dispatches reveals the activities of the most effective lobby working inside British political parties.
The pro-Israeli lobby in this country is the most powerful political lobby. There's nothing to touch them.
We investigate the Israel lobby's bankrolling of British politicians.
I don't believe, and I don't think anybody else would believe, that these contributions come with no strings attached.
The Israeli invasion of Gaza earlier this year caused huge controversy. A few months later, the Conservative Friends of Israel held its annual lunch for conservative politicians and businessmen. This year, the star speaker was David Cameron. I was astonished to note that he made no reference to the widespread killing of innocent civilians and massive destruction in Gaza 6 months earlier. Indeed, Cameron went out of his way to praise Israel because, so he said, it strives to protect innocent life. He said, if I become Prime Minister, Israel has a friend who will never turn his back on Israel. I resolved to ask questions. How does the pro-Israel lobby in Britain work? Who runs it? And how does it get results? What's clear is that support for Israel is a powerful presence in all the main parties. Look at this recent exchange in the House of Commons when David Amos, Secretary of the Conservative Friends of Israel, asked what the government was doing to improve British relations with Israel. Ivan Lewis, the Foreign Office Minister who had been Deputy Chair of the Labour Friends of Israel, replied.
Israel is a close ally of the UK, and we have regular, warm and productive exchanges at all levels. We shall continue to foster a close relationship with Israel.
There's people who are very strongly supportive of Israel, yes. And, you know, the Conservative Friends of Israel, the Labour Friends of Israel are all part of that.
Yes, there is a pro-Israeli lobby, and it's active in trying to define the debate in order to limit the options that British politicians can choose to options which would be acceptable to that lobby.
So how does the lobby work? Money plays a big part. Millions of pounds in donations from businessmen and others into the bank accounts of politicians and political parties. The Conservative Friends of Israel is one of Westminster's most active lobbying groups. It claims as its members 80% of all Conservative members of Parliament. Watford, north of London. Inside this church hall, a Conservative Party candidate for the next election, Richard Harrington, is trying to win over the locals. Voters in Watford may not be aware that Richard Harrington is also chairman of the Conservative Friends of Israel. Individual CFI members have given him over £20,000 in the last year. And out of his own pocket, he's given £34,000 to Conservatives. And that's not all. Aside from raising cash, some of the pro-Israel lobbies in Parliament also pay for and arrange trips to Israel. They have sent almost as many MPs and candidates on trips to Israel as have been made by all MPs to the United States and Europe combined over the last 8 years. I've been on one of these trips, and to do justice to the Conservative Friends of Israel, I came under no pressure to write in their favour. But for some politicians, these can be trips with a difference. 2 years ago, the CFI took 20 parliamentary candidates to Israel. When they got back, 10 of them received donations totalling £30,000 from CFI sponsors.
Do you think there's a connection between the, on the whole, surprisingly soft line the Conservative Party takes towards the foreign policy of the Israeli state and the pattern of donors to the Conservative Party?
Well, I think in the past there has been a connection between the people who gave money, but who we met and we talked to, who were passionately concerned about Israel, and obviously we listened to their concerns. Mm-hmm. And in some ways we reflected them.
But they don't like to talk about it, at least not in public. One Tory MP privately taunted me to make a film about the pro-Israeli lobby. He said, "You don't have the guts of the biggest lobby in Westminster, and it's a big story." But when I went back to this courageous individual and say, "Hey, come on television and tell us about it," he ran a mile. One Tory front bencher was so paranoid that he insisted I didn't just turn off my mobile phone, but take out the battery in case we were being bugged.
Here's how the lobby uses its influence at the highest level of British politics. 3 years ago, Israel invaded Lebanon in retaliation for Hezbollah's attacks into northern Israel, during which two Israeli soldiers were killed and two kidnapped. During the Israeli invasion that followed, 1,000 Lebanese civilians were killed, and an estimated $3.6 billion worth of the Lebanese economy was destroyed. William Hague had recently been appointed Conservative Shadow Foreign Secretary. Some 21,000 in donations were sent to him by CFI board members, including hedge fund billionaire Alan Howard and again Richard Harrington.
I don't believe, and I don't think anybody else would believe, that these contributions come with no strings attached.
On July 20th, Hague made a speech. In it, he called the Israeli response disproportionate.
And I think we can say, in response to the question of my right honourable friend, that elements of the Israeli response are disproportionate, including attacks on Lebanese army units, the loss of civilian life and essential infrastructure, and such enormous damage to the capacity of the Lebanese government does damage the Israeli cause in the long term.
Moderate enough, you might think, but Lord Carnes, a leading CFI donor who owns Dixons and was treasurer of the Conservative Party, was outraged and threatened to withdraw funding to the party.
Sir, William Hague's usual good sense has deserted him. Think again, William, for whom do you speak? Your comments are not merely unhelpful, they are downright dangerous.
No further donations were received by William Hague from CFI board members.
Well, I knew Stanley Carnes when I was the chairman of the party, and he was one of those who took the view that any criticism of Israel is effectively damaging to the Israeli state.
The Israeli lobbies appeared to want to censor British politicians from saying that elements of the Israeli reaction was disproportionate, and they appeared to be willing to use financial pressures as a way of enforcing that decision.
We've learned that after William Hague's speech, the director of the CFI, Stuart Pollack, had a meeting with David Cameron, at which it was understood that terms such as disproportionate are not the sort that Conservatives should use to describe Israeli military action. And then last June at the CFI lunch, David Cameron didn't mention Gaza at all in his speech. He said, "I look around and I see some of our biggest donors, and a special thank you to you."
He's going in front of a very large audience of very wealthy people, many of whom are going to give huge support to our party in the next election, which we need. So you don't go in and pull the tiger by the tail.
For several months, we've been investigating the finances of the Conservative Friends of Israel. Here's what we found. First, let's look at income. In the Electoral Commission register, the Tory pro-Arab lobby reported income of £83,900 last year. So what did CFI report? Well, nothing. That's because it's an unincorporated association, which means it's just a collection of individuals who don't need to open their books. It may be legal, but it's hardly transparent. Next, how much in all does the CFI and its members hand out to the Conservative Party and candidates? Again, public information is sketchy. The Register of MPs' Interests shows that CFI board members and their businesses gave the Conservatives over £2 million in the last 8 years. But that's not the whole story. One Tory MP told me how, after a chance meeting with Stuart Pollock, two cheques arrived through the post from businessmen closely connected to the CFI. He'd never met either of them before, and neither of them, so far as he knew, had even set foot in his constituency. We've also discovered that over £30,000 from CFI members went to campaign funds of members of Cameron's team, first elected in 2005. Ed Vasey, now Shadow Minister of Culture. Greg Hands, Shadow Treasury Minister. Michael Gove, Shadow Education Secretary. Grant Shapps, Shadow Minister of Housing. Brooks Newmark, Opposition Foreign Affairs Whip. And Shailesh Vara, Shadow Deputy Leader of the House. And what about David Cameron himself? We found out that in 2005 he met CFI supporter Pochu Zabludovic for coffee. Afterwards, he gave Cameron £15,000, followed by £50,000 to Conservative Central Office. Mr. Zabludovic says that he was an early contributor to David Cameron's leadership, and all his contributions are a matter of public record. We've been reliably informed that donations from all CFI members and their businesses add up to well over £10 million over the last 8 years. We believe that's more than any other lobby in Westminster. Here's another example of how the pro-Israel lobby works. A few weeks ago, the UN was to vote on a resolution following Judge Goldstone's report criticising both Hamas and Israeli forces for human rights abuses in Gaza. The CFI rang up William Hague's office, and after consulting with David Cameron, he gave them this quote.
Unless the draft resolution is redrafted to reflect the role that Hamas played in starting the conflict, we would recommend that the British government vote to reject the resolution.
Blair, good morning. Are you confident today?
It was under Tony Blair that the Israel lobby first acquired real influence in government. Former chairman of the Labour Friends of Israel, John Mendelssohn, boasted,
Zionism is pervasive in New Labour. It's automatic that Blair will come to Labour Friends of Israel meetings.
Today, Mendelssohn is Labour's chief fundraiser. And Labour Friends of Israel has sent even more MPs to Israel than has the CFI. Shortly before Blair became party leader in 1994, he met Michael Levy, the pop music millionaire, at a social event arranged by the Israeli embassy. They became friends, playing tennis together, and Levy became Blair's chief fundraiser. It's estimated that he raised over £15 million for Labour before the row over cash for peerages. When Tony Blair became Prime Minister in 1997, he awarded Michael Levy a life peerage and made him his special envoy to the Middle East. But because Lord Levy was unpaid and working directly to the Prime Minister, what he negotiated between Israel and its Arab neighbours on behalf of Britain was kept secret.
He didn't want to be a minister because had he been a minister, he would have been questioned on what he was doing. From the point of view of people like myself, a Shadow Foreign Secretary, I wasn't going to support what he was doing unless I knew what it was.
Oxford University Middle East specialist Professor R.V. Schleim thinks Levy's role was actually damaging to Britain.
Something became skewed in British politics when an unelected friend of the Prime Minister had so much influence over British policy towards the Middle East. In this sense, I think that Michael Levy probably did do some damage to British interests, but very clearly he damaged Britain's reputation in the Middle East.
But Labour may lose the general election next spring. Today, the Conservative Friends of Israel are making sure they will be influential if David Cameron forms the next government.
I've just come from the Conservative Party conference centre, and it's filled with every kind of lobbyist and interest group promoting their message. It's impossible not to admire the sheer professionalism and hard work of the Conservative Friends of Israel, with their long list of breakfast, lunches and evening receptions. They expect the Conservative Party to hear their message, and more than that, to deliver. The longer I'm here, the more I'm beginning to feel that the CFI's purpose is to make sure David Cameron's Middle East policy is in step with the political agenda of the current Israeli government. It also has a surprising friend. It seems that any friend of Israel is a friend of the CFI, even if they have a questionable past. I'm very interested that this man here, Mikhail Kaminski, Polish political leader, this man has been lionized by the Conservative Friends of Israel because he's pro-Israeli, and they seem prepared to disregard the fact that in the past he's made remarks which to some people could be construed as anti-Semitic. Mr. Kaminski represents a right-wing Polish party. A few years ago, he refused to apologize to the Jews for what had happened to them in Poland during the Second World War. But today, the CFI is prepared to overlook those remarks, citing his support for Israel Now. And David Cameron has put the Conservative Party into an alliance under Kaminski's leadership in the European Parliament. Yet when Kaminski spoke at the CFI luncheon, Director Stuart Pollock didn't want television in.
I'm sorry. Please take it down.
We asked Richard Harrington, the CFI's chairman, about Mr. Kaminski.
CFI is totally supportive of Mr. Kaminski.
About the CFI's activities and donations, he said,
"We work openly and publicly to ensure that Israel's case is properly understood in Parliament. There is a clear distinction to be made between donations made independently by individuals who happen to be members of CFI and those made by CFI as an organisation. All donations have been registered in the appropriate way and are in the public domain. Even taking this into account, Dispatches claims that donations add up to well over £10 million in the last 8 years is not supported by any facts."
In part two, Madonna's friend, the man who bankrolls the public face of Britain's pro-Israel lobby. January this year, Israel invaded Gaza in response to Hamas rocket attacks. TVs around the world broadcast pictures of destroyed homes and dead and wounded Palestinian civilians. Months later, allegations of human rights violations were still in the news. But you wouldn't know it from this piece in the News of the World, or from this piece on the Mirror's website, both about the threat Israel faces from its neighbours. And you certainly wouldn't know that both journalists' trips had been organised and paid for by an organisation called BICOM, the Britain-Israel Communications and Research Centre. BICOM is one of the most well-funded pro-Israel lobby groups in Britain. One man who knows BICOM is Professor David Newman. A few years ago, he worked alongside BICOM to help get across Israel's message in British universities.
They tend to be very blindly supportive. In other words, there is clearly a debate. It's not just a debate here. It's a huge debate inside Israel, whether Israel should or should not continue to control the West Bank, whether settlements are legal or illegal, moral or immoral. And what you often find is that the groups such as BICOM outside Israel tend to close down that sort of debate. They tend to say you have to be totally supportive of Israel, full stop, whatever Israel does.
BICOM's chairman is Pochu Zabludovics, who contributed to David Cameron's campaign funds. The Sunday Times ranks him as the 18th richest man in Britain. Yet outside his circle, few people seem to know much about him.
I've never met the guy. What is interesting is that he wasn't part of the traditional Anglo-Jewish establishment, But there is something in England which has been founded in the past 10 years called the Jewish Leadership Council, which is sort of a House of Lords of the big Jewish givers or donors. And then my understanding is, after he sort of funded BICOM, he was then co-opted onto the Jewish Leadership Council.
So I asked David Goldberg, Rabbi Emeritus of London's largest liberal synagogue.
Not a name I know. It's not come across my consciousness in my dealings in Anglo-Jewry.
In fact, Mr. Zabludovics holds Finnish citizenship. Today he has a home here in North London's exclusive Bishop's Avenue worth at least £3 million. His father made a fortune selling Israeli artillery and mortars around the world. Pohu also used to be in the arms business, then moved into property, buying 4 hotel casinos in Las Vegas. His Tamares Group, which is registered in Liechtenstein, has business interests worldwide. Recently, the Zabludovics... More interestingly, Mr. Zabludovics, as well as chairman, is also bankrolling BICOM.
Here are its latest report and accounts. These show that last year it received no less than £800,000, a huge donation from Poko Zabludovic. The accounts also contain a very interesting clause. The company meets its day-to-day working capital requirements through the support of P. Zabludovic. P. Zabludovic provides monthly financial support to the company by way of donation.